and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm one of your hosts here with Mike Nechavruta and Gordon. Our daf today, Bava Metzia, daf Chaf Gimel, page 23. Yesterday, we introduced the machlokas between Rabba and Rabba about marks on objects that can be trampled, or meaning that they can somehow be, you know, erased, you know, sort of by everyday use. So the example that they gave were small sheaves that were found. Even if they had a mark on them, there was a machlokas between Rabba and Rabba if they needed to be returned. And the machlokas was around that according to Rabba, if it has what they call the siman ha'asui lidras, an identifying mark that tends to be trampled, meaning an identifying mark that can be sort of, you know, erased or you can't see it anymore, that is not considered to be a siman. And it's according to Rabba, this type of siman hasui lidras actually is considered to be a siman. So the Gemara here in our daf does something that we see often, which is when we start with the machlokas of the Amorayim, the Gemara comes and basically says, you know, can we find actually that this is a Tanaitic dispute, right? This goes to sort of the previous, it's not even generation, but sort of the previous era. So the Gemara basically says, Lema Kitanai, right? Can we say that this machlokas between Rabba and Rabba about an identifying mark that can be trampled, right, is the same as one that is recorded in our Mishnah? And that's what's interesting, is they want to say that it could be a similar machlokas to what's in our Mishnah on Dav Chaf Aleph. What part of the Mishnah do they quote? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Kol davar sheyesh bo shinoi, right? Anything that has something unusual in it, chayav lahachriz, someone is obligated to announce. In other words, if it has a siman, you have to announce that you found it because it's something that could be identified by the owner. Kate said, how does this work? Somebody found a round cake of pressed figs with a pottery shard inside of it. Kikar bituchol ma'od, a loaf with coins inside of it, right? So these were all sort of things that were initially listed in the Mishnah as being things that normally you just return, right? A round cake of pressed figs or a loaf, right? But here, what Rabbi Yehuda is saying is no, if you have one that even though it's sort of like a typical object, right? It's something you would find that isn't so identifiable, but if there is something that could be used as a siman, you're going to use it. So it goes on to say the Gemara, Michlal, this implies the Tanakama Savar, that the Tanakama, right, doesn't hold like this, Hare Elu Shelo, that these, you know, this type of cake, even with the pottery shard in it, or the loaf of bread with coins in it, would actually belong to the owner. That in other words, there can be something that is a siman that we don't really consider a siman. So first the Gemara wants to sort of clarify this a little bit more. Svaruha, right? They, those posting the questions, assume to Kulei Alma that everyone, both the Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda, hold siman haba me elav have siman, that an identifying mark that may have come about on its own, right? Meaning you could have an identifying mark that's accidental is treated as an identifying mark. In other words, having a shard of pottery in a round fig cake or coins in a loaf of bread, it may not have been there on purpose. It may have been there accidentally, or maybe it was even unknown to the owner. But the assumption that this line of reasoning is making, the Gemara is saying, is that both the Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda would agree that we could accept the idea that these objects were intentionally placed, you know, that they were intentionally placed to make it into a siman. So therefore, this unusual fig cake or loaf has to be treated as a siman. Like, yes, pottery could fall into it or coins, but there is the idea that this could have been done on purpose. Uma'aviran al ha'ochalin, and that the Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda are of the opinion that one may pass by food on the ground and leave it there. So that's the other thing that's interesting. So the cake and figs and the loaf are things that could be trampled underfoot, and therefore, you know, what gives them a siman actually could be destroyed because somebody, you know, they're underfoot. So now that we explain sort of these two assumptions of agreement between the Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara goes on to say, my lab, is it not, the siman has sui lidrash kama flige, that what they're really disagreeing about is an identifying mark that tends to be trampled and therefore destroyed. Mar savar, right, one master, the Tanakama holds, lo habe siman, it's not treated as an identifying mark. You know, it's because it's something that can be destroyed. And therefore, whoever finds the object, even with it intact, doesn't have to announce it. Umar Savar, and the other one, and this has to be Rabbi Yehuda, have a siman. It's still treated as a siman, that even though it could be destroyed, right, or somehow shifted or changed, if you find that loaf with the, you know, the pressed figs with the shard in it or coins in the loaf, you need to announce it. And so this could be a way of interpreting the Mishnah so that it actually fits the machlokas of Rabba and Rabba. Now, the Gemara is going to reject this interpretation of the machlokas because of a position that it gives to the Tanakhama that seems to contradict an earlier ruling of the Mishnah. Amar Rav Zvid Mishmei de Rabba. Rav Zvid said in the name of Rabba, Isaka datech, if you should think, de kasavar Tanakhama, that the Tanakhama holds, siman ha'asui lidresh lo ave siman, that an identity to be trampled is not treated as an identifying mark, even if it's found intact. Uma'aviran al ha'ochlin, and that a person can pass by food on the ground and leave it and doesn't have to pick it up. Kikarot shel bal habayi b'reshut ha'rabim amai machriz. Why then does the Mishnah rule that somebody who finds somebody's homemade loaves in a public domain has to announce it, right? Because what it's saying is that there's something so distinctive about somebody's homemade bread that it's unlikely, it's not a semen that would be obliterated, even though it was found in the Rishuta Rabbim, and you have to announce it. So this seems to be that, okay, you can't say that the machlokas of Rabba and Rabba actually fits into our Mishnah. So the Gemara from here is going to give another explanation of the disagreement, right? And that's what they'll move on from here, okay? Ella Amar Rav Zvid Mashmei de Rabba. So Rav Zvid said in the name of Rabba, to Kuli Amasfari, everyone, both the Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda agree, Siman Asui Lidres Have a Siman, that an identifying mark that tends to be trampled is still an identifying mark. Uma'avirin Al Ha'ochlin. And everyone agrees that one can pass food on the ground and leave it there. Bahacha B'Siman Haba Me'elav Kamaflige. So what they're disagreeing about here, right, this case of the pressed fig cake with the pottery shard or the loaf with the coin in it, they disagree regarding the significance of an identifying mark that may have come about on its own, right? In other words, the idea that you found a mark, but there's a possibility the mark could have been put there on purpose or the siman could have been put there by accident. The Tanakama Savar, because the Tanakama holds, Siman abame elav lo have a siman. An identifying mark that could have come by its own is not really treated as a siman. The Rabbi Yehuda amar have a siman. Rabbi Yehuda says actually it is a siman. Okay, so that sort of follows Rava's opinion, and that's one way of explaining that Mishnah. Then they're going to explain the Mishnah according to Rava's opinion. I'm just going to read the beginning of it. It's a long passage. For Rabba amar lach, Rabba could say to you to kule alma. Siman has sui lidresh lo have a siman. He could say everybody agrees. The Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda agree that an identifying mark that tends to be trampled is not an identifying mark. Vein ma'aviran al ochlin, and everyone agrees that when you cannot pass by food and leave it there. Okay, so whereas before we said ma'aviran, you're not allowed to. Bahacha here, this case of the fig cake with the pottery shard in it, the siman haba me'elav kamaflige. What they disagree about is the significance of an identifying mark that could have come on its own. Not, you notice like how they're playing around with it. With Rava, it was, you know, so it's an identifying mark that could come on its own. Tanakama Savar, the Tanakama holds, lo habe siman, it's not treated as an identifying mark. For Rabbi Yehuda Savar, habe siman. And Rabbi Yehuda holds that actually what? That it is treated as a mark. So what's interesting here is that it sort of takes both of their positions about whether or not you consider siman hasui lidres have a siman, but it can fit it into both the Tanakhama and to Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. It's going to continue from here and give a different version of this discussion. But I think the point here is that you cannot insert the machlokas of Rabba and Rabba into that Mishnah. You either have to read the Mishnah according to Rabba, or you have to read the Mishnah according to Rabba.
So a strange coincidence, if we can have a coincidence, is that I happened to see something today about this bread, this loaf of bread that was discovered at Pompeii It wasn't discovered now. I'm just saying I happened to see something about it today. And it was preserved. I mean, carbonized, I guess, whatever. It was preserved and it had a baker's stamp in the bread. You can Google and it's very easy to find. Plug in bread Pompeii and you'll find it. And it's black because, again, carbonized bread from Pompeii. But what I find to be interesting is that one of the reasons, right, that they would, that bakers, as opposed to individuals who happen to have a distinctive siman because of the way they made their bread, but people would actually stamp their breads for the sake, in, you know, Pompeii, they're talking about the first century CE, right? This is approximately, I mean, it's before the time of the Gemara, but, you know, that they would stamp it for the sake of preventing fraud, right? Which I find to be a fascinating concept to begin with, that this was like a common thing in the ancient world. Here, I feel like I went to bakeries, you know, with some regularity in Jerusalem. I don't think any, and to some extent, like, you know, you can see, well, there's this kind of pita and there's that kind of pita and that kind of challah. And there's one, like, there's one kind of pita that my son most prefers if it comes from one bakery, but he doesn't want it from a different bakery. But you can't tell if you look at the bread what's the difference. He's looking at a label, right? Like at a plastic or a printed label. So I just find it interesting that all of this question of how do you identify who the baker is? How do you identify what is found? How, like, it seems to be, you know, something that was a much more, I don't know if it was a bigger issue in the ancient world, but it seems to have been a more live issue. I don't think anybody's paying attention to that now. Like, maybe because things are mass produced. I don't know. I just find it interesting. And as I say, coincidental to today.
I think that's an interesting question. Like, are there less simanim on objects today than there used to be? I mean, I guess today you would, you know, identify something by its mass marked label, like it says Target on it or something like that. But I do think objects are labeled in a way, and that is kind of how things are in the world. But I understand what you're saying, that maybe it looks different today than it did at the times of the Gemara.
Right, right. That's true. And marking ownership and then being able to determine who created it or who owns it now obviously makes a difference. Okay, I'm going to move on to the very top of Amud Bet, where I've got a citation from the Mishnah, right? If you'll recall, we're talking about the list of things that if you found them, you could keep them. So one of them was machruzot shel dagim, strings of fish. Now, again, if I have done enough, if I've gone fishing and I have, you know, caught enough fish to make a good line, then I think that should be identifiable as my line of fish. But amongst people who are regularly fishing and regularly, you know, producing lines of fish, it seems to be not such a dramatic, identifiable kind of thing. And the Gemara says, am I? Now, why is it that you, the Gemara wants to know, like, well, we'll continue reading and it will become clear. L'have kesher siman. Why not? You could say, let the knot, by the knot on the line of fish, right? It's tied with a knot. And why not call that a distinguishing mark? Meaning how you tied your fish together on their string, isn't that going to be identifiable? And then you could return to the person whose fish they were. Bektara ditsaida. So the Gemara explains that we're talking about a distinctive fisherman's knot that everybody tied their fish with. And so then it's not distinctive, meaning it's, yes, it's a fisherman's knot. It tells you that you had a professional there, but it doesn't distinguish from one fisherman to the next. The kule alma haki maktere, because everybody used that kind of knot to tie the fish. Okay, v'lahave minyan siman. So the minyan siman. Why not let the number of fish in the line be your siman, be your identifying mark? Because one person caught 14 and one person caught 70, right? It's going to be, that should be sufficient. And the Gemara says, Biminyana de Shavim. Well, the Mishnah's case is talking about a situation where the strings were all equal, meaning everybody would, you know, go to, let's say, to 20, and then they would start a new line. I'm making up the numbers, but the idea is that there's no distinguishing mark in having that number, any number of fish, because everybody's having the same number. So now, Baomine Rav Sheshet, they took the question before Rav Sheshet about being able to return, I'm sorry, being able to keep the fish on the line. Minayan have a siman, o lo have a siman. You know, is this a kind of thing that you could say there's truly no distinguishing mark on the item? Or could the number in fact be a distinguishing mark? Amarlohu Rav Sheshet, Tintuha. He says to them, you've already learned this, which I find to be such a teacherly thing to say, right? Like, remember in seventh grade when we did fractions, it was then. I'm, you know, obviously not exactly like that, but he says, you learned this in a breakdown. What's the breakdown? Matzah klei kesef, uklei nechoshet, gastron shel avar, v'chol klei matachot, harei ze lo yachzir, ad shitein ot o ad shechaven mishklotav. He says, if, and he presents it, right? If a person finds silver vessels, copper vessels, pieces of lead or metal vessels, and the person who found them does not have to return those items to its owner until, or unless really, the owner provides a siman, a distinguishing sign, a mark, or can accurately provide the weight. The owner has to be able to give some kind of proof that the owner is really the owner. Umin de mishkal have a siman, mida uminyan nami have a siman. And Rav Sheshet's point is, right, the very fact that you could say that the weight of metal is going to be a distinguishing mark, then all the more so, or it doesn't say all the more so, but the point is then, so too, right, the measure of something or the number of something, all of those kind of technical, logistical marks, measuring marks, are going to be considered a distinguishing enough mark to say, yes, that's enough to return to the original owner. The Mishnah goes on and now talks, after the fish, talks about meat. V'chatichot shel basar, meaning you find cut meat, you know, a cut of meat on the, I don't know where, left on the bus, at the bus stop, you can keep it. Amalei, so again, the Gemara asks, why? Lahave mishkala siman, let the weight of the cut of meat be the distinguishing mark that the person who bought it can say, oh, that, you know, 2.3 kilo, that's my meat. So the Gemara says, no, we're talking about weight, that everything is equal. And the fact is, this I understand a little bit better, maybe because I'm more likely to buy meat according to some weight, right? And if I can tell you, right, from a meat counter, I imagine the same is true. I haven't bought meat at a butcher in America in a long time or other parts of the world. But in Israel, if you go up to the butcher counter, either in the supermarket or at a butcher, then they'll have prepackaged, let's say, ground meat or cutlets of schnitzel, you know, of chicken, and then, or you can ask for the amount that you want, and or you can get it approximately. So in this case, some of those packages are going to be of equal weight always, and that's clearly what the Gemara's concern is here. So the Gemara goes on, "V'tahave chaticha gufa siman, o dinavka o daatma." The Gemara says, okay, so if you're not talking about different weights, then say the cut of meat itself should be a distinguishing mark, meaning, you know, is it thigh, is it the neck, what, like, what part of the animal is it? That should be your identifying element to the meat. Mi lo tanya matzah chatichot dag v'dag nashuch chayav lachriz chaviot shel yayin v'shel shemen v'shel tevua v'shel grogorot v'shel zeitim harei elu shelo. So the Gemara says, wait, hang on, we know there's a breita, namely, if you found cuts of fish or fish that were bitten, whatever this means, then you're obligated to, like, to proclaim and declare that you have found this thing. And if you found barrels of wine or of oil or of grain or of dried figs or of olives, then the person gets, the finder gets to keep them. And so the distinguishing mark in the fish, then, as opposed to, it's interesting that this was not raised in the lines of fish above, right, that it says the very part of the fish is where it was cut, that's what we're talking about. The Gemara answers, Hacha b'mayaskinan, b'de'ika sibada b'paska. So the Gemara says, okay, if you're talking about a distinguishing mark of the shape of the cut, then that works. Ki had the Rabbah bar Rav Huna, machtich le atlata karnata, because Rabbah bar Rav Huna would cut the meat, and I feel like this is our, you know, connection to this season of the year here, would cut the meat in three quarters, right, making a triangle, right? We're almost to Purim. Dikadami dikatani dumya didag nashuch shmamina. And so the Gemara goes on to say, well, the Breita is, you know, also careful. It says, you're saying that you're talking about fish that could have been similar to other fish, where you might say this is a distinguishing mark and you might not. So you have to look very carefully to see, is the fish being cut actually something that makes it identifiable? At this point, I'm going to stop both in the interest of time and because it kind of closes it nicely or nicely enough, the Gemara goes on to talk about other cases of these different kinds of foods, the barrels of wine and so on, if they're found, and it continues to raise these questions of when do you need to return them and when is it really sufficient to say, no, there's no distinguishing mark here, you get to keep it.
I do find it interesting how the Gemara seems to know all about this. Do you know what I mean? That it's, all these different, and each thing is its own category that has to be discussed.
Yeah, that we think we have an overriding principle. Is there a distinguishing mark? And yet each case needs its own investigation.
Right. There is an overriding principle, but each case it's going to be an own type of mark. So that's what makes it sort of hard. You can't say it's that the mark has to look like this. It's that this type of food has this mark. This thing has this mark. This thing has that mark. What I wonder is, did people know what the marks were? Like, it's so detailed in a way that, if you did find an object, how did you know if it was an object you had to declare or not?
I think it's exact. I mean, that's why the Gemara is working so hard here, right?
Right, but your average person, was that stored in their head? Did they go to their local, member of Chazal? That's the part I can't figure out.
I think it's an excellent question. I wonder if there weren't experts around, or if people maybe didn't lose and find things as often as these Dapim have made us think.
Yeah, also people didn't have as much stuff as we have today as well. So, that's also part of it. Well, that's our DAP discussion for the day. Rank us, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hajjim website. Let us know what you thought about this DAP on our Talking Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.